Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome to the program. I've got some things I'm going to open up with tonight. I'm going to go over some rates and load indexes. Go ahead and press 1 on your phone now. The lines are open. Lisa can start screening your calls. Remember, tonight is open lines. Anything you want to talk about, anything you want to ask, it's up to you. Let's get some calls going. Go ahead and press 1 on your phone. Lisa will get right to those and start screening those. If you're listening online and you'd like to join us on the phone, got a question, a topic, a comment, whatever it might be, the call-in number, 347-884-8327. That's to join us, and there are some open lines, so let's get rolling. Good news on the freight front tonight. And I finally got a question answered. For the last several weeks, actually for about 6 weeks now, I've been watching the freight index improve, and I've been asking myself, why aren't the rates following? And it wasn't making sense to me, understanding supply and demand. And I knew there was kind of a lag, but I was waiting week after week as the index gets better for the rates to get better. Well, I got my question answered this week. Let me explain a little bit about one of the indexes that I use, and I've been following this one for a couple years. This is the market demand index from the Internet Truck Stop, and it's one number that measures available freight against available trucks. To give you a history, if we go back almost 2 years, the high point for this index was at 13. That's just to give you an idea of what the number is, what kind of a number we're talking about. The low point was down under 1, down around the 1 mark, really bad, and we stayed and we bounced along the bottom for a while. In fact, we were still in the 1s just a year ago. And since that time, we've seen a pretty steady climb out. We reached almost 4 back in May of 2009, and we dropped back down into the mid-2s. We climbed back up to a little over 4 in October, and then we dropped again, which is pretty typical of freight trends, that they peak at the end of a quarter, drop at the beginning of a quarter. What we're seeing now, so that was a pretty steady increase, at least. I mean, it wasn't huge, but we've been watching the index come off the bottom for about a year now. Now, what we've seen here just recently is a really steep incline in the index, and it happened again this week. The index is now at 6.55. That's up another 7% from last week. It was up, I think, 7% the week before. In fact, we've gone in let me see, in 4 weeks, we've gone from 4.28 to 5.28 to 6.11 to 6.55. Those are the biggest increases we've seen in over 2 years. So what I kept saying was, why aren't the rates following? Well, I got the answer. The market demand index has kind of an equilibrium point, a point where things get better for rates, and that number is 7. Anytime we're below 7, even though we're getting better, if we're below 7, there's just not enough pressure. There's still too many available trucks, just not enough pressure to bring rates up. 7 is the tipping point. We're getting real close. So I would expect that March should be really good. Now, March, we still should see this increase. There's no reason not to. End of the quarter, we might even see more increases. That may get us up above that 7 mark. Now, here's the thing that can be deceiving about this index. This index doesn't go up only because there's more available freight, so it's not necessarily an economic indicator, because the index can go up if one of two things happen or both. If there's more available loads, that can drive the index up, but if there's less available trucks, that can also drive the index up. And really what we've been seeing more of is truck availability decreasing. We have seen load availability increase every week. In fact, this week it's up 2%, but truck availability is down 6%. So the biggest part of why the index is getting better isn't so much that the economy is getting better, it's that trucks aren't able to hold on anymore. When it comes right down to it, for those of us with trucks, doesn't really matter which one happens. Both of them are good. I mean, we'd love to see the economy pick back up and a lot more freight available. But for now, if we can at least weed out some of the weaker trucks, the same effect happens. We get more miles, we get better rates, and that's a good thing. So that's what's going on overall. Here is what's going on with the rates. Nothing too exciting yet, but at least now I understand why. Average equipment rates are up 3%. To $1.65, flatbed rates up 1% to $1.50, reefer rates up 7% to $1.69, van rates up 3% to $1.47, specialized up 1% to $1.95. All of those numbers are from the market demand index from Internet Truck Stop. The other index that I watch is from TransCore, which is DAT, and they follow each other pretty closely. They always point in the same direction. The numbers aren't always the same. TransCore is actually showing their freight index up 32%. So there was a really big jump on TransCore's, the DAT system this week. Truck availability was down 5%, which is pretty close to identical to what was going on at the Internet Truck Stop as far as truck availability. As far as rates go, coming from the TransCore side, the load-to-truck ratio, dry van, up 31%. That's the other difference between the two indexes. On TransCore, I can actually see the load-to-truck ratio on three different segments, not just the industry as a whole. So dry van load to truck ratio up 31%. Dry van rates month over month still down 1.2%. So no real increase in rates to speak of. Reefer load to truck ratio up 30%. And reefer rates pretty much flat, 0.7% month over month. No big increase there. Flatbed load to truck ratio up 44%. Nice jump. And we're finally seeing some movement in the flatbed rates. They are up 1.6% month over month. So overall, very good news for those of us who are interested in rates and available freight. I've got some more from that I might go over later on, but I do want to get to your calls. We've got a lot of listeners on the line, not a lot of calls. If you've got a question, a comment, a topic, go ahead and jump in. Press 1 on your phone right now, and we'll get to your questions and comments. Again, if you're listening online and you want to join us, there are still some lines open. In fact, really almost unlimited lines now on the new system. You can call us at 347-884-8327. We're going to start off tonight in Colorado. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, and thanks for all the rate information. That's some good stuff to know there.
You're welcome. What can I help you with?
I've got a 60 series Detroit, and I've talked to you before about my fuel, and I'm starting to see some increases in that. So I'm starting to whittle down on some of the issues there, so I appreciate all the things you say about those. Fuel on that, but I also have a pretty bad oil consumption issue. It's not leaking it. It's got a fair amount of blow by. I've never had it tested, but I'm going through a gallon about every 1500, and it's got about 800,000 miles on it.
Ouch.
Still has good power, and I'm having the second oil sample sent in since I bought the truck. And the first one, since I didn't know a lot about oil samples, I just trusted that they said that there wasn't any concerns, but there wasn't any pattern yet. So I'm sending the second one in and going to see how it comes back. But I just want your thoughts on that kind of oil consumption.
I have several thoughts. Let me try to make sure I get them all in order here. First of all, a gallon at 1,500 miles, that it's time for an in-frame. I mean, really, I start saying a gallon at 3,000. We should be putting money aside and, you know, getting ready soon. And at 2,000, it's time to do it. At 1,500, there really isn't any question it's time for an in-frame unless there's something else going on. Now, as far as the oil sample, it's not going to tell us much. And here's why. Because we're already at the event, we're not going to have enough history for it to tell us anything other than if there's something outrageous going on, like we've got a cracked head, we're getting coolant, we're getting fuel in the oil, something like that. It may tell us that. But when we're looking at engine wear and if it's time for an in-frame, what we're looking for is things like chromium and lead and metals, wear metals, that would indicate excessive wear of rings and liners and things like that. Well, the reason this oil sample isn't going to tell us much is because the wear has already all occurred.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So there really, I don't expect to see anything in this oil sample that's going to tell us much more. It's good you did it. And there may be something in there, but the wear issue itself of the rings and liners, which is causing all the blow-by and the oil consumption, I don't think we're going to see it in the oil sample because I think it's already happened.
Okay.
How long have you owned this truck?
So I've had it just since September, and I knew the motor was weak when I bought it, but I only paid $10,000 for the truck. It's an 03 classic Freightliner.
Okay. And that's... You know, that's not a problem. I would wonder why this happened would be my concern. It's an 03, so it's pre-EGR. We see this sometimes with EGR engines because we see EGR engines where fleets have tried to extend drain intervals without any kind of bypass filtration, and there's so much soot in the oil. And soot is abrasive, and it causes this kind of engine wear. We don't typically see it nearly as much on a pre-EGR unless it just wasn't taken care of.
Well, I've got the history on the truck. It's had pretty good care taken to it. The problem is the engine runs really hot, and I knew that when I bought it. He's replaced the radiator and done a lot of stuff to it. And I called the guy that's owned the truck since it's an old Trans Am truck, and he's owned it since Trans Am sold it, which has been 200,000 miles. And the engine runs hot, and I'm assuming that could be part of the problem. And he's never been able to figure out why.
Yeah, and that can be part of the problem because I'm okay with engines running hot up to a limit, and we have to protect them. But the hotter an engine runs, the more expansion of the metals that happen, and that can cause increased wear. So, you're not going to do any more damage to run it. I would run it if you need to, but I would also be looking at a time when you can afford some downtime and go ahead and get this taken care of. It's certainly not going to get any better, and it's definitely time. Let's go to Michigan. Carl, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Can you hear me?
Yep, you sound great. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I send you greetings from balmy Sawyer, Michigan, which is I-94 exit 12, the TA there. A lot of guys will know that. You gave some numbers earlier. What's that?
What's the temperature? I was talking to Bruce Mallinson earlier today, and he said when he woke up it was like minus 17 in Pittsburgh.
Oh, no. Like I said, it's balmy Sawyer, Michigan.
Balmy, okay.
We're at least in the 20s.
Oh, good. Okay. All right.
Just your numbers there earlier, Kevin, you were given for the rate indexes. When I get your email saying you're going to talk about that, I make sure I tune in because I've been off the road since October.
Okay.
Paying attention to the landscape and what's going on out there. I don't know how to interpret them. Like a $1.47 a mile, is that with or without a fuel surcharge? And is that the rate that's going to the broker that later on is whittled down and makes it down to the truck? Or how does that work?
Okay. It is with fuel surcharge because this is what's called spot market freight. This is – in this – really, these are the only numbers we have. If loads move under contract, there's really no way to get that information because it's typically not shared. It's the shipper has a contract either with a broker or directly with a carrier, and their rate is their rate. We don't know what it is. So spot market freight is the stuff that doesn't move under contract, makes it to the load boards, and, you know, we have all that data. And we are talking about millions of loads that move through these boards. So there is a lot of data to get out of here. So the rate is total rate. Typically spot market doesn't need to have a fuel surcharge broken out because when I'm looking at spot market freight, I know what the fuel price is today, so I don't need a fuel surcharge. I just need the rate. Now, as far as whether this is the broker that's getting this or is this what's getting to the truck, it's a little bit of everything, and sometimes this is what the rate was posted as. It's not necessarily what it moved as. So I use this not necessarily to know, oh, boy, if I wanted to, move a reefer load today, I should be able to get $1.69 for it. That's not necessarily true, but if I know that reefer rates went up 7% this week and I was getting $1.50 last week, I should be able to start moving my rate up. The other thing that we have to realize about rates is the numbers that I give you are nationwide, and lane rates can vary dramatically. So we might have a national rate at $1.69, and there are still lanes out there, you know, moving at $1.05.
Okay. The spot market, I didn't follow all of that. Is this likely some of the cheaper freight that's out there, like the higher paying freight that never makes it to the load board? Is that if there were another measure that factored in the stuff that never makes it to the load board, would it be even higher, you think?
I'm not sure if it would be. Logic might tell us that, yeah, possibly. So, again, I don't necessarily use these rates for any kind of budgeting. I don't use these rates to say, here's how much money I could make this week. I use these rates more as just an indication overall what's happening with rates.
The future of swashing is here. Introducing Finnish Quantumatic, a revolutionary dispenser and 12-watch refill system that releases advanced detergent so powerful you won't need to pre-rinse, but will still get an amazing shine. It's only dishwashing, but you deserve brilliant results. New Quantumatic, only from Finnish, the diamond standard.
Okay, did anybody else hear that?
Hello?
Yeah, hello? Were you just hearing a commercial?
I heard a commercial.
Yeah, I have no idea where that came from. Somebody just decided to put a dishwashing commercial in the middle of my show.
I hope you got the money for it.
Yeah, I'm going to, you know, try to find out who it was and get some money for it. I have no idea what that was. So, let's get back to what we were talking about.
Yeah. So, if I may then, I was going to ask you kind of break it down for like a guy who's leased on and, you know, like around 62%. But it sounds to me what you're saying is don't go with it that way. Just kind of use it as an index for comparison. Is that the case?
Yeah. No? Yeah. And yeah, exactly. And the other thing about rates is that I do look at direct lanes. I use both of these systems, the load boards themselves, to go in and look at lane rates. And even then, it's not necessarily to say, okay, here's what, you know, has happened in the last 30 days in this lane. The average is $1.42.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that number's okay, but that number is better when I use it with experience to know that if the load board's saying it's $1.42, I've been doing $1.50 in that lane. And if it drops 20%, well, the odds are even though I've been doing better in that lane, mine are probably going to drop 20% as well. Mm-hmm. So they're indicators more than absolute numbers. And when I combine those indicators with my own experience, then I'll come up with, you know, real-world numbers that I can use. And that just takes time. You know, the longer we pay attention to the rates, the more of this kind of stuff we learn.
So, like, if I were to go back like a couple of years to get the spot market index, I could compare that to what it is right now and then really get an idea of just using that measure, how things stand compared to, like, say, 2 years ago to this month or something like that. Is that available? Is that
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. It's kind of like fuel mileage. You know, I've been telling people for years, the closer we watch our fuel mileage and the longer we watch it, the better we get at it. You know, somebody who just starts tracking their fuel mileage this month and they've got 15 fuel receipts in, I mean, they're going to start to learn things. But, you know, if you've been doing it for 5 years, now you're really going to know. When something happens and something changes in your fuel mileage, then you're really going to get it. And it's the same thing with rates. The longer I do this, the better I'm going to get at it. So, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And like I said, I've been off since October, you know, and you know, it's actually been great for me to lay low during the winter time, but, you know, it's kind of like a surfer there waiting for that wave, you know.
If you're waiting for the wave, I think it's time to jump on the board because I think that we are getting closer all the time. Let's go to New Mexico. Todd, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing good. What's on your mind?
Well, two things. The first one is pretty easy, I think. Going back to the load availability numbers that you were talking about, one
yeah.
thing that I've been noticing over the past couple of weeks, I haul for a pretty big shipper a lot, and they were a direct customer of ours. And through this economic upset, they've changed the way that they do business, the actual shipper or manufacturer, and
okay.
they put all of their lanes out for bid, and they run freight all over the country, okay? It's a reefer load.
Okay.
Brokers came in during this last round of bidding, or they opened it up and brokers came in. because they didn't have a lot of the companies that they've worked with before can't make the cheap rates or have gone out of business, you know, gone on to other things, so they opened it up to brokers. And that's causing a little bit of a problem, but the brokers are getting weeded out, it seems, pretty quick because they can't live up to their expectations.
Right.
But what, you know, seeing the increase in those numbers, I guess what I'm trying to say is how much do you think that has to deal with freight that wasn't on the spot market, you know, the 3, 5, 15 truck companies that aren't out here anymore, and the shippers have had to respond by going to the spot market on their loads?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know what the number is, and I don't know that there would be any way for us to know that. You know, the one thing about when brokers come in, when they weren't there before, shippers don't go to brokers necessarily to get a better price. Shippers go to brokers for convenience. And logically, a carrier should always be able to beat the price the broker's charging. Now, short term, that's not always true. Brokers might just move the freight with somebody who's barely hanging on by their fingernails. But logically, you have to think about it. The broker has to put that freight on a truck, just like the shipper was trying to do. And the broker's got to get a cut out of it. So whatever the carrier is ultimately willing to take from a broker, had they gone directly to a shipper, the shipper would have got a better deal, and so would the carrier, and the broker is the one who gets cut out of the transaction. So brokers in the long term should never be able to beat us on price. The only thing they should be able to beat us on is convenience, in the fact that they can go in and cover 30 loads a day out of a shipper, and it might take 4 or 5 small carriers to do that, and the shipper may not want to deal with 4 or 5 small carriers.
Right.
But as far as how much that kind of stuff is affecting this index, it's a good point, but I don't know of any way to measure it.
Okay. Now, the other thing is, my commercial that I if you want.
Go ahead.
I'm
you
breaking
were break-
up.
Yeah, you are. In fact, I think I'm going to cut you loose here because we're really starting to break up bad. Let's go to Tennessee. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Kevin. I got a quick question for you on fuel gauges. I wanted to know, I don't top my tanks off every time I fuel. I just put in the fuel that I need to complete the run that I'm on at the time. And I wanted to know if fuel gauges would work for me doing it like that.
How often do you top off?
Well, if I get a load that's over 1,000 miles, usually I'll top it off at that point. Now, I do keep track of mileage and how much fuel I put in the tank each time. That way I can keep a running total. And then when I do top it off, then I bounce all those numbers together and to see where I'm at.
Fuel gauges will work as long as at some point you top off. It will keep that running total for you. It won't give you a fuel mileage number for those individual fuel ups because it can't, but as soon as you top off, as soon as you top off and you enter that receipt, then the system will calculate your overall average and your average since your last fuel up as well.
So it'll know that whether I'm topping off or not. It's not going to say like, oh, one time. It'll think that. Oh, okay. All right.
Every time you enter a fuel receipt, there's a check mark right in the entry that says, well, actually, we put in two check marks. We put in one that it says partial fuel up, so all you do is check the box, and then the system knows it was a partial, so it won't calculate. And if you do multiple partials, it will just keep holding the information until you do a complete top-off. And then the other check mark is to say that you missed a receipt. And that will, even if you miss 10 receipts and you want to start over, once you check that box, the system will keep all of your old data, but it will start your odometer readings new so that, you know, we're not all screwed up because you missed a couple receipts. So it's as flexible as we can possibly make it.
Okay, okay, that's good to know. All right, that's pretty much all I had.
All right, I appreciate it. All right, I've got a couple more calls. Well, we've got a lot of open lines. If you want to join us, press 1, and we'll be able to get to your calls. If you are listening online and you want to join us, you can dial us up at, well, I don't know if we have any open lines here. Got a lot of listeners, not a lot of questions. If you want to try dialing in, you can, 347-884-8327. I'm going to head off to Louisiana. Hugh, welcome to the program. Do you have a word for me?
Yeah, I do have a word for you. That would be Fair Tax Now.
Got it. All right.
Yeah. You know what I'm noticing about this system? When you answer the call, you know, when you pick up a call, it's seamless. When I call you on the air, on the radio show, there's a whole lot of junk going on when you first connect with the call. I don't know if you're aware of that or not, but on this system, it's just seamless.
We are aware of it, and that's one of the reasons why we were looking for a better system, because you actually have to get transferred twice under our other system. You are on hold with Lisa, and when you are, he can't hear the show. You know that, so we hate that. Then when you're the next caller up and you're on deck, you get transferred to my other computer. Are you still there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. I think I was playing around with things there. Then you can finally hear the show, but when I bring you on air, I actually have to transfer you one more time, and the sound goes dead for the caller. And everybody thinks I hung up on them. And sometimes that dead air is 2 seconds, and sometimes it's 10. And we can't control the delay. So that was one of the reasons why we're looking to replace it. And we think tonight, we're not sure, we think tonight that the phone number is now transferred permanently for the live show, so that tonight when you dial the 8888 Road Dog number, you should end up on the new phone system, we hope.
Oh, I guess we'll see.
Yeah,
all right.
We'll see.
A few things, and I'll try to get them all in before the next soap opera commercial break. I heard it too, by the way. Anyway, let's see, winter fuel mileage. I haven't had a chance to go in and look at any of the posts. I noticed that she started a discussion about winter fuel mileage, and mine has definitely fallen off. I've never, even last year when everybody else was reporting drops in fuel mileage, I didn't. Man, mine just was great. But this year, it's really dropped off. I had gotten to where I was consistently getting 8.1 miles to the gallon out of this truck, and right now I'm averaging 7.66, but
okay,
quite often I'll get like a 7.2 or 7.3 on a fill up, and that really freaks me out, because I was really enjoying getting the 8.1 consistently, But anyway, that could be attributed to a number of things, not the least of which is the winter driving, the winter fuel, the denser air, the higher rolling resistance, and all those things, and the mechanical friction that's increased during cold weather and so forth. But anyway, I have an opportunity to put my truck in the shop for a couple of days, and I am going to have the charge air cooler tested. I'm also going to have some fuel lines replaced, because this truck's got over 800,000 miles on it, and I'm thinking that might be a problem. I'm having a problem with my Davco fuel filter losing prime, and it's something that's new, so I'm going to have that checked out. But when I do get the charge air cooler checked, what am I looking for? I know I don't want to pass or fail. I'm wanting a certain amount of loss in a certain amount of time, what would I be looking for?
When we pressurize the system, and I want to be standing right there when they do it, because
and I think that could be done.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many guys have called me and they say, my fuel mileage still hasn't come up. I did all the things. The charge air cooler was tested. And I'll move on because I can't keep hammering the same point. Even when in my mind I think, wow, this really sounds like a charge air cooler. And they'll say, I've had it tested. And I had somebody call me and he said three times. He took it to the shop. All three times they said, your charge air cooler's fine. The fourth time, he finally says, I stood there. I wouldn't let him test it until I was there, and they kept arguing with me that I couldn't be in the shop. He said, I'm standing there watching them test it, and it wouldn't hold any pressure at all.
Oh, my goodness. So
what happened the first three times? It couldn't have even been anywhere near spec. You know, so
You didn't get that condition overnight.
Yeah, we want to pressurize it to somewhere between 30 and 40 pounds of pressure, and we want to watch the loss in 15 seconds. Now, spec says it can lose up to 5 pounds of pressure on most engines, 7 pounds on a Cummins. Cummins allows 7 pounds of loss in 15 seconds.
That's
one a big
pound
hole.
Every 2 seconds, yeah.
That's a big hole. And 5 is still too much, because what we found is that at 5 pounds of pressure loss, your fuel mileage drop could be as much as a half mile per gallon.
Wow.
So my number is more like 2 or 3 pounds of loss, and I'm going to fix the problem sometime soon.
All right. Now, if I am losing 4 or 5 pounds, does that necessarily mean I need to replace my charge air cooler, or do you get that kind of loss just through maybe connectors or something that
tight? We need to find. Yeah, what it means is we need to find it, and we can isolate it because there's several different ways we can test. We can start our pressure test right at the turbo, and we could end our pressure test inside the engine. Now you have to know what you're doing if you test it that way, because we will get some air leakage around the rings. So you kind of have to be a little better to test it that way, but that tests the entire system, intake, manifold, and everything. Then I would test it with blocking off right at the intake manifold, and if I have a leak then, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go right to the charge air cooler and bypass all hoses and connections. So now we can isolate where the leak is, and if the leak is in the charge air cooler, then, yeah, I'm going to replace it. I'm not going to try to repair it.
Okay. Is that much of a lag if my shop orders a drawer light? Is it going to take several days to get one? Or
Some shops keep them in stock. Many of the Detroit garages, I think, keep them in stock.
Well, this is not a Detroit garage I'm going to. It's a shade tree mechanic. I'm using that term loosely. He's worked on my truck before. He seems very competent.
Then what I would do is I would call him ahead of time and ask him to look around to see how long it's going to take him to get his hands on one.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds like a good idea. All right.
Now
all charge air cooler. I'm sorry. Was there something you wanted to say?
Oh, nothing. I just wanted to let you know all of a sudden we have about 50 callers that want to say something. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I better let you get on to those. Again, Fairtex Now.
Fairtex Now. Maybe we'll devote at least 10 or 15 minutes of every political show to the Fairtex. Let's see. Who is up next? I have hands everywhere. Harlan wants to talk about the fair tax. You know what? Why don't we just go there real quick? Harlan, it's your turn. I'm doing good. What's up?
Oh, good. First of all, I do love your show.
Thank you.
And I am definitely for the fair tax. And I mean, I see many, many benefits from it itself. But, you know, the thing that gets me is not really a lot of politicians talk about it.
No,
and,
they don't.
I got two quick questions about it. First of all, who started the fair tax or the idea of it? And second of all, what are the chances of this ever passing?
Boy, you know, I just had all my fair tax stuff up here. There was a group, and it was actually a group of, it was one company, and I'm not going to remember the name without digging through all my stuff, the name of the company and the name of the CEO, and the idea got started because every time the CEO needed to make a decision, whether it was buying equipment, hiring people, firing people, changing prices, lowering prices, no matter what decision he wanted to make, he had to bring in all of his financial people to figure out how it was going to affect their tax picture because taxes are so complicated. And he kept saying to himself, you know what? This is ridiculous that we have to spend this much of our productive time figuring out how our decisions are going to affect our taxes. There's got to be a better way. And they actually started working on a better way. And that was years ago. And they came up with the fair tax. And since that time, it's been changed and added to and tweaked. And, you know, many economists have gone through it. Many tax experts have gone through it. There has been, initially, there was $20 million invested into the idea by a group of business owners to pay for all the reports, all the studies. I mean, this isn't just an idea that somebody threw out and said, hey, I wonder if this will work. There has been tons and tons of resources poured into this to figure out all the different issues and work out all the answers. And I can't say that they've got 100% of the answers because taxes are pretty complicated and how it would affect our economy is pretty complicated. But, boy, they have got a lot of the answers. No question about it. There's a lot of effort has been put into this. Now, the odds of it passing, what it really comes down to is you and I. How hard we all push for it, how hard we work to educate other people about it, and that's the way that it has to grow.
Yes, I agree. And one other comment I'd like to say about it, which I don't think I've ever heard it mentioned, is something like this happens, you know, fair tax come into play, another big benefit would be a person could set aside more for retirement.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
You know, it's so complicated. Yeah, it's so complicated now. Because if we set aside money in a savings account, let's say we're not ready to commit to a retirement account, because the problem is if we put money into a retirement account and then we want it back out, we get penalized.
Correct.
So people won't put it in because they don't want to face those penalties. If we invest it outside of a retirement account, we just put it into an investment account, and we've got it in mutual funds or whatever, we get hammered with taxes every year. Not only did we pay tax when we earned the money, now we invest it, and when we earn money on our investments, we pay tax again. So our tax system discourages people from saving money.
Yes. Yeah, it's just a great idea, and it's something that could, I mean, you know, of course, we're still in this recession. You know, if this gets passed, it would bring us out of a recession in no time.
Absolutely. I mean, unfortunately, when you ask what are the odds that we're going to pass it, that's a tough question to ask. I am optimistic enough that I will continue to fight for it. What are the odds that we would pass it in time to get us out of this recession? Zero to none. And it's a shame, because if we could pass it, it would pull us out, no question. Let's go to Georgia. Matt, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Kevin.
Hey there,
well,
what's up?
You said it needed calls, so I thought I'd bring up a hot topic.
Okay,
and
go
then,
ahead.
Then your phone rings off the hook.
I know. I know.
I know you mentioned it once, and I've always got a kick out of it, too. with T-bone pickets and his push to switch all trucks to natural gas or LNG or whichever.
Right.
Well, I live up in Minnesota, as you know, and there's a big push for power plants to switch to natural gas. And they're building a new one, or that's in the permitting process, by my house. The website is sunriseriverenergy.com. I'm going to read you a paragraph out of here because this affects Minnesota a lot. Our primary fuel will be clean-burning natural gas. In addition, a backup source is required in Minnesota because if natural gas supplies stall during a cold snap, this fuel may be temporarily cut off to our facility in order to preserve supplies for home heating. We have chosen ultra-low sulfur distillate fuel oil as an environmentally responsible choice for backup fuel. There's a lot of large businesses in Minnesota that run natural gas for different industrial purposes that are on this program. If it gets cold, they have to shut down because the supply is not there.
Unbelievable.
So where are they going to fuel all these trucks at in the middle of winter?
Well, you know,
they can't
and
home with it.
Exactly. And here's the thing. I mean, T. Boone Pickens, bless his heart, can go out and you know, do all the commercials he wants, but people need to understand the facts. And he can say all day long, we have more natural gas. He can throw out all these numbers. Well, you know what? We can say the same thing about oil. I've heard the statistics.
Yeah.
There's more oil under the Rocky Mountains than there is in, you know, I don't know, Saudi Arabia.
The North Slope of Alaska has got enough oil to supply the whole United States. More details about T-Bone Pickens, he wrote a book. It's called The First Billion's the Hardest. That's the name of his book. And, you know, it explains in there during Katrina, you know, in 2005 and all that, when the price of natural gas shot way up, how good that was for him.
Well, I bet it was, and that's wonderful. I mean, I love the fact that, you know, I love the fact that his second billion is coming easier than his first. But what I don't like is the fact that he's changing government policy.
Yeah.
If he can make it in the free market, more power to you. When you start screwing with government policy to do it, now I've got a problem. And there's a reason we don't use natural gas, because it's not economically competitive.
Isn't there another big, long book called Atlas Shrugged kind of related to that subject?
Yeah, exactly. Kind of scary that you know, he's the one in there changing government policy and getting all these tax credits on things that benefit him directly.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, because he says he's not in it for himself. He's 80 years old, and he's not going to live to see the day when it actually affects him, but, you know, his portfolio, and he's got a kid, and, you know, he's looking out for his future of his family.
Let's think of that logic. If he doesn't care because he's not going to be alive, then you don't care one way or the other. You care about this for some reason. You know, whether you're going to be alive or not, there's some reason you're pushing this, and you're really not being honest about what the reason is.
Well, he says it's patriotic, you know, to wean us off of foreign oil, which, you know, is probably true. If they produced all the natural gas we got, the supply would be there, but, you know, the free market's going to demand that. So
I have, you know, the whole thing about being weaned off foreign oil, though, it sounds good and it sounds patriotic, but it's a red herring. We get our oil from like 80 different countries.
Yeah.
And two of the biggest are Canada and Mexico. It's not the Middle East.
Yeah.
We're not dependent on the Middle East.
It's wherever it's the cheapest. We could run on 100% U.S. crude, but
yep.
you know, it's cheaper to get it somewhere else.
Right. And so there's, I don't think we're dependent on a source that's going to hurt us. We may suffer some short-term consequences if the oil from the Middle East completely stops, but there's plenty of oil to go get. We don't need them. All right, good stuff. I got to move along. I've got other calls to get to. Let's see. Let's go to Tennessee. Dan, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I have a question. I'm in the process of bringing another driver under my authority and trying to figure out how to keep track of the finances and stuff. Right now I'm using QuickBooks and spreadsheets for myself, but I don't see that really working when I bring on other trucks. And I was wondering if you had any suggestions.
There's
Trucker's Helper out there, but I've heard that it's not – rule user whatever.
That's a tough one, and I'm not going to have a direct recommendation for you only because you've never used any of the available products that are out there. You're going through a tough phase. If you had 10 trucks leased to you, there are some software programs that work pretty well for that size of an operation. When you've only got one, it's tough to be able to afford the solution, so you're kind of stuck in the middle, and really what you end up doing is you probably end up just winging it because you can't afford a custom programmer, and you can't afford most of the stuff that's off the shelf. So I really haven't looked at, the in-between kind of stuff. What you're looking for is something that's going to handle the settlement data for that other truck, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can actually build spreadsheets to do some of that. I'm trying to decide what all I need to do and what I want to just, like the other guy I want to lease on to me as an owner-operator. And I'm like, well, should I make him do his own IFA? Those are some of the decisions I'm trying to come up with.
Yeah, IFTA's pretty simple because there are good programs to do IFTA, even for just a couple trucks, like ProMiles, and I would highly recommend using ProMiles. I think for settlement, your best bet is going to be just to write a spreadsheet to do it. And then use a combination like you're already doing of spreadsheets and QuickBooks.
Yeah. Yeah. My biggest problem was the owner operators keeping track of how many miles they run in each state, et cetera, for IFA. So I thought about pushing it off on them.
Well, here's what I would do. I do have a great recommendation for this. And it's never going to be 100% accurate unless you get real cooperation from the guy, but it'll get you very, very close, and that is to use ProMiles both for fuel optimization and for your IFTA, because here's what would happen. When you dispatch this other truck and you dispatch him from Cleveland to Houston, you go into ProMiles, and you could even offer this as a benefit. You go into ProMiles and you dispatch it Cleveland to Houston, and you tell him, look, here are your three best fuel stop options if you want to get the best fuel price. So it's a nice benefit. You're giving him information to help his bottom line, and now all of the state mileage information is tracked in the system. You don't need him to report it to you.
True.
Now, he might go out of route, but you know what? I'm not going to worry too much about that most of the time. And the odds of them auditing and finding some little out of route, isn't going to be that big of a deal. You could ask him, to report any out of route miles when you dispatch him. You could say, okay, here's the way I've got you routed. If you're going to do something different, just let me know. But at the end of the quarter, as long as you just dispatch every trip like that, at the end of the quarter, you hit the button and out comes the IFTA report for you and the other truck, and you're done. And nobody has to report any mileages back to anybody.
Okay. ProMiles. Okay. I'll have to look into ProMiles. I know I'm on a I have a discount fuel program that I can look up prices across country on a daily basis.
Well, here's the other advantage to having ProMiles. You can put your discount into ProMiles. So that
fluctuates daily, and it's not a fixed amount.
Oh, you've got a cost-plus discount.
Yeah, it's Fleet
okay.
One QPN thing.
Got it. Well, you can still manipulate that data better inside of ProMiles by looking up stops throughout the whole route. But so
right.
The fuel optimization still works for you, but what really works for you is the IFTA reporting. It makes it really simple.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. The other thing that you're going to run into, though, is the settlement dispatch side, and I think you're just, for the most part, you're just going to have to wing it when it comes to that. Let's see. I'm off to James in Texas this time. James, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing good. What's on your mind?
Kevin, I live in West Texas area. As you know, there's nothing but miles and miles out here, and there's no big cities, and we don't have the mass amount of loads that is available to many people across America. And that has kind of been my biggest problem right now. I have my own authority, and I've been trying to run my own deal, but load availability is just almost impossible to get me out of where I live. And I've talked to many companies about trying to get my truck and trailer leased on or maybe have some loads give to me to help them out or something. And my truck is a 2000 Peterbilt. My trailer is a 98 Great Dane Reaper. And they all tell me, your stuff's too old. We can't use you. And if I go buy new stuff, we'll be glad to load you. But my finances and the economy doesn't call for all this new equipment. What should I do? I don't want to lose everything that I've worked for to this point.
Right. Couple things real quick because we're going to run out of time here. I'm down to about 2 minutes.
Okay.
Have you considered Landstar?
Yes, I talked to them, and they said, well, you don't have enough coast-to-coast driving in snow and that type area. For the last 5 years, we were contract haulers for WDT Logistics, which is a milk company, and we just stayed in the Texas area.
Okay. The one thing about Landstar is they are very picky. When did you talk to them?
I talked to them about 5 months ago.
I don't know if it's been enough time to go back. It can't hurt. The other possibility, I mean, keep looking. There are companies out there, and you may have to park the trailer, but there are companies out there that you could definitely put the truck to work. And one other option for you is to look around somewhere as close to home as possible, but you're going to have to keep expanding that area until you find somebody. Find a broker who will be willing to work for you as a sales agent.
Right.
Meaning that you'll contract with them. They'll go out and find the freight to get you out of your area, to get you out of home or as close as possible. Sometimes we just live in areas that you can't. And you pay them a flat rate rather than negotiate every load and get them working as a sales agent. And that's definitely one way you can get stuff. All right. I'd like to take another call, but we are just all out of time. So I want to thank you for joining me. Stick around. The live show is coming up in 30 minutes. And we will be back here again tomorrow night for the Pit Politics in Trucking. And tomorrow night, I think I've got a very interesting show. If you are not interested in politics or you don't understand politics or you avoid politics, this is the show for you. Politics 101. I'm going to talk about just the very basic things we should know about politics. What do the Democrats believe in? What do the Republicans believe in? Liberals, conservatives, libertarians, all that stuff. Thanks for joining me. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.